You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, a very special guest returns, Julian Rose. Julian is a champion of organic farming and hands-on president of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. He and his partner co-launched a highly successful campaign for a GMO-free Poland while leading a high-profile defense of peasant farmers, who he holds up as the true guardians of biodiversity throughout the world. As a result of their efforts, there are now GMO-free zones established in Poland, leading the way throughout the global community and setting the standards for what's possible. Additionally, Julian is a brilliant author and essayist. His first book is called Changing Course for Life. His newer book is In Defense of Life, Essays on a Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom, and both are available at Amazon.com Books. You can find his articles, materials, books, research, and thoughts on his website, which is www.julianrose.info. So let's welcome Julian back to the show now. Hi, Julian. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. Thanks, Lars.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm always amazed that this works at all. You know, I'm sitting here at 8 o'clock at night in Poland on a dark and rather grey wintry evening. And you're no doubt sitting somewhere in California. I don't know what the weather's like with you. But
well, it's a little grey and overcast.
Yeah, not chemtrails, I hope.
I don't see any at the moment, but they do persist.
They do persist. Yeah. Yeah, of course they persist at this end too. Somewhat less, I'm glad to say, in recent months.
Well, I don't know what to attribute that to, because we don't really know the inside scoop on all of that, and nobody's telling us, so it's
how
just,
true.
You know, it's kind of a deep, guarded mystery, just like all of the things that go on behind our backs that degrade our health and our well-being.
You've hit exactly the subject which I was going to raise almost straight away. But I was first going to say, I think we should pay special tribute to Doug and Don, you know, for having got the BBS radio back on air again after this disaster.
Yes, absolutely. I had written something in the intro, and then I thought, no, just let it go and let it raise when it comes up. So
yeah,
that's a tribute to their commitment and dedication to keep BBS radio running after a fire burnt down the whole station and left them homeless.
Incredible. And yeah. I mean, it's a brilliant story. I think this is such an important symbol for people today.
Because absolutely.
What this world desperately needs is people with guts and determination and vision. And that would change everything. And I think Doug and Don have exhibited exactly those qualities, including some of the old pioneer of the West spirit. You know, you don't let the loss of your home and your profession and your radio station do you down. You get out straight away, rebuild it. And my God, I congratulate them. I take my hat off to them.
Oh, absolutely. And they did it all within a month after they lost everything. So
that's even more significant.
Yeah. Well, you know, my grandparents were pioneers and they came out here in a covered wagon from Kansas. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm familiar with all of that stuff. And there is definitely a strong spirit that has driven some people to do good in the world.
That is exactly the case. In fact, we haven't really been properly informed about just how bad these fires have been in California, particularly in Paradise, I believe, the name of the very town where the studio is and where Doug and Don's home is, and how extreme the situation was. But I did read reports at the early phases of it, which were very remarkable and horrific, to tell you the truth. And at least 80 people had been killed. And that's extremely unusual in a Western country It's a place like California, of all places, you know, the 80 people, and I expect it was higher than that in the end.
Right, right. It is unusual, and there are other things that are unusual about that fire, but I don't really want to get us going down a garden path.
No, fair enough. Right. Well, I mean, I can read your mind on that one.
Right. Yeah, we're pretty good at that.
Well, I was thinking all along, this isn't natural.
Yeah, thank you.
Exactly. You know, Lance, I've been very preoccupied, and so is Jadwiga, in the last few weeks, because I was asked by a Polish television company, and the leading alternative television company in Poland, to interview the world leading scientists on Wi-Fi electromagnetic microwave transmissions, a man called Dr. Barry Trower. And he's famous, and he's got, you'll find if you look him up on the internet, you'll see many, many interviews he's done over the years. He's a man in his mid-80s who grew up, well, whose profession basically, which he was a physicist by training, and he was later trained in reality by the Royal Navy, right back in the late 40s and 50s, in the very first stages of developing microwaves as a military weapon.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. And he later saw what a horror story this was and blew the whistle on it all. And he basically told the story of how the early forms of these microwaves were used for mine detection and submarine detection, and how they knew right from the beginning that they were extremely harmful to human beings. They were, in fact, literally developed as weapons of war. I asked him in the course of the interview, which is incidentally on YouTube and can be watched. It says Julian Rose interviews Barry Trower, NTV, Poland. You should be able to find it. We had about almost an hour and a half talking to him. And he basically revealed that the wavelength being used for standard internet, and for that matter, microwave transmissions from towers to cell phones and et cetera, tablets, et cetera, is the same wavelength, very, very close to the same wavelength that's used for crowd control in the USA.
Mm.
And in fact, he said it's called a growler. Mm-hmm. And that's what they nicknamed it in the US Defense, Ministry of Defense and Navy. They call it the growler. And it basically hits your brain waves so hard that you can't even stand up and coordinate yourself.
Mm, right, right.
Yes, so it comes in at 5G is the latest rollout, which is now being put forward throughout the world, being led by America, as I'm sure you're aware of this. And it's rapidly gaining pace, and it's beginning to happen also here in Europe. This 5G, the 78 gigahertz, the growler is 90. Okay, there's very little difference between those two.
Oh.
And the fact is that this latest form of control of humanity is going to be a blanket control this time, because they're launching in the next 2 years, that is the proposition of the cabal that's behind this. All the big names are there, Boeing, Google, they're all in there, to launch 20,000 satellites to cover the entire planet. And what they're boasting is every square inch of the planet will be covered.
Wow.
Every square inch of the planet. Everyone will be monitored. Everyone will be affected. No place will be left to hide. And how they're selling it is instant access. In other words, no lag. You see? And people are already addicted, as you know. People are already addicted to their mobile phones. I mean, you just have to walk outside and you see people walking around like zombies,
right,
staring at these things in their hand, playing with them and bumping into things, because they can't live without them. And they've waited, I think, until now to then introduce the next phase, which will effectively mean that those people have been constantly attacked with weaponized microwaves. And in towns, they're going to be fitted every seventh or eighth house. In other words, on the lampposts or on trees or whatever it is. And so you wouldn't be able to get escape from it at all. In fact, they're actually already cutting trees down in cities to make sure that the signal passes freely.
Oh, gee.
And I just told you a tiny little bit of what was... I'm being very quite overwhelmed by this because I've been, you know, actually interviewed him. And now I'm embroiled in an attempt to campaign in Poland to stop this happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going at the highest possible level. We're going to try and get the chief scientist in Poland to a conference, and I'm going to bring Barry Trower over from England. And he, who has access to all the top secret papers on this particular subject, because he was an insider, he was even interviewing Russian spies. He's worked for MI6,
wow,
as well as the Navy. He has documented evidence, which was put the secrecy stamp on, proving that they knew right back in 1973 that this is basically a killer.
Yep.
And he can produce the papers. He's got them. He's got access to these very papers. And, of course, the government refuses to release these papers. So, you see, I'm suddenly thrust into another of these massive campaigns like GMO. This time, it's not genetically modified organisms on the ground. It's genetic modification of our organisms from the air.
Right, right.
Well, I'm sorry, this is not exactly a relaxing metaphysical journey, Lance.
No, I know.
But those who are used to you and I getting on probably realize that they can't lie too far back in their chairs and fall asleep.
Right. It's too confronting to our senses and too frightening in a sense. And you have to, of course, you can't operate from fear because that's ineffective.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, I'm sure listeners, if you're not aware, I'm sure your listeners are aware of the rollout of 5G taking place in America at this very moment. I'm working with a man called Arthur Furstenberg, who's running an international campaign. And he the head of his paper is Planetary Emergency. And he's got a global network for against the rollout of 5G. And he's collecting signatures of scientists and doctors all around the planet. He's already got 200 or 300. And that's already happened in the last year. No, 2 years ago it already happened that the European Union was lobbied by 150 doctors and scientists from all around the world and some laureates, you know,
mm-hmm,
some winners of Nobel Prizes,
wow,
saying they must hold this back until a proper independent test has been carried out. And the European Commission has completely ignored them.
Well, of course.
Yeah, of course. This is exactly what happened with GMO, you know?
Yes, and that's a very convoluted tale that you've shared about that in the past.
Yeah, very convoluted indeed. And, of course, you see, the business itself, I think he said it's worth $77 trillion. It's the largest business. It's overtaken pharmaceuticals as the largest single business in the world. I'm talking about telecommunications, wireless communications,
mm-hmm,
Google, Facebook, you know, you name them.
Yep.
They are now the number one baddie. And they have no scruples, which is interesting because a lot of people thought when in the early days, especially with Google, I think, that, you know, this was launching something which was, so to speak, people-friendly.
Right.
Right. We all believed that. And finally, you know, we had access to each other and to our plans and to our thoughts and to our information spreading to lay the foundation for an alternative approach. But as it's got bigger and bigger and bigger, the same old issues seem to have arisen, and the leaders of those organizations, and we know who they are, of course,
right,
have obviously, they obviously fell, if they hadn't already fallen from the beginning and we were just being fooled,
right,
already fell for the you know, being top members of the most important club in the world. And therefore, they wanted to get more powerful and they couldn't stop. now they're very much on the side of big business, and they don't awfully care what happens to humanity.
Right.
Because humanity, I think we put it in rather simple terms, is going to be fried if this thing really does get off the ground.
Well, they've already got us frying our food with microwave ovens,
which,
as you know, completely undoes the genetics and the molecular structure of food, so it's just scrambled.
Well, that's exactly it. You've hit the nail on the head there. And you know what's really interesting? And Barry Trower told me this. He said the measurement, which was fixed about 30 years ago by American scientists and government people colluding together, they decided that they had to fix a health standard which would prevent them being taken to court and sued. So what they figured out was this. They said, if you can sit for 6 minutes, if you don't feel too warm in 6 minutes, it's safe to use for the rest of your life. Now we're talking about when they have a cell phone next to your ear. Right. If you don't feel warm within 6 minutes, it's safe to use for the rest of your life. Now,
wow.
That was called the thermal test. And everybody who had a mobile phone a number of years ago used to say, oh, well, you know, I don't feel my ear warming up. But you just said what is absolutely correct. This isn't to do with outside energy going in and heating. It's to do with inside energy via microwaves heating up the inside and coming out.
Oh, right.
But that's how you cook something in a microwave oven.
Absolutely.
So they got us with that. And that clause is still the one holding up everything. Although it's been disproved, they're still clinging to that. Amazing, isn't it?
Yes. And it's amazing how they can just steamroll over everybody and how brainwashed everyone is out of their addiction to technology and cell phones.
That's just it. And that brings me to my next book, Lance, which is called Overcoming the Robotic Mind.
Okay.
Why Humanity Must Come Through. And I did quite a lot of research in the course of writing this book, which I've been writing over the last couple of years. Basically, again, putting together a lot of essays I've written in the last 3 or 4, 5 years. And the theme of the headline, Overcoming the Robotic Mind, was chosen really because this tendency to be mind controlled, to be extremely addicted, and to be incapable, it seems, of overcoming this addiction on a huge scale, on a mass scale, would appear to be the single greatest threat to the future of the human race at this stage.
It certainly looks that way to me.
Yeah.
And then we haven't even touched upon nanotechnology and the technology that exists to implant chips like in the Matrix trilogy. That will allow people to enhance their abilities and their intelligence and various other physical traits that will just simply rock the whole world.
Yeah. So something, and I'm thinking that this issue of the Wi-Fi one just might be the thing that pulls everybody together, because all these things coming at the same time, very close to the same time, certainly in the last decade or so, all these issues, nanoparticles, nanochips, chemtrails, nanoparticulates, and all the rest of it, Wi-Fi, and then the GMO, and toxic food, and toxic water, and toxic air. They're all really the build-up into the level of overt emergency levels, crisis levels, from the point of view of the health and well-being of not just man, but animals, insects, plants as well.
Yeah.
We're reaching the crisis point. And it's a really extreme, it's the test, I think, of whether the waking up process, which is undoubtedly going on. I mean, I don't know how much you feel it, but I feel very remarkable changes, very positive changes have been happening in the last 6 months to a year over here.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very strong sense that people are waking up and waking up fast, you know. The question is the tipping point, isn't it?
Right, right.
When do we get, we get to the 10 or 15% of humanity required to create a sort of dominoes effect tipping point? And there are a number of people who are considered very quite wise. One of them is Eckhart Tolle. Have you heard of him?
Yes, I love Eckhart's work.
Well, he's recently said that he feels we're very near the 10% mark.
Ah.
Yes. And I think it's significant that he said it, actually.
It is significant.
He's traveled a lot all around the world, and he's, of course, very famous, giving lots of talks on the spiritual issues, starting from his famous book. What's it called? I can't remember. I was going to say Be Here Now, but that was the famous book which came a long time before him.
Right. Well, if you think of it, just holler it out.
sure. But anyway, he made this remark, and so have one or two other people said, we're getting very close to this tipping point. There's a certain feeling in the air in countries I visited in Europe of a sort of rebellion bubbling under the surface because of the incredibly arrogant mistreatment of people by their governments. One of the most recent ones, and it was in France.
Right. Well, what happened there?
You know, the kid called Macron, who is trained in the banking industry, Goldman Sachs, I believe, and became president a year and a half ago. He got on there and he decided he really wanted to live the life of Napoleon. So he set himself up in Versailles on a throne and greeted people and marched through the streets with full military honors and all the rest of it. And then decided it was time that he really got control over the workers, like Mrs. Thatcher did in England in the 1970s, you know, kicked the unions out and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And so a year and a half after the French public, I believe, were mind controlled to elect him, they're suddenly furious. And it's get this man out, you know. It's just unbelievable. And it's just in a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, is that kind of indicates that there is, that those who are at the top of the ladder, supposedly, must be very confident about having won already, yes. Because they're launching things that are so in your face that it's obvious now to anybody that's even reasonably not brain dead, and rolling out things that are really quite frightening.
Good point. I do think they are. There is a level of a very remarkable form of arrogance,
mm-hmm.
Which does suggest that they're united. When I see pictures of leaders meeting in Brussels, and I mean, I've been following, of course, Brexit,
yes.
The famous saga of Brexit. But I'll talk a little bit about that shortly.
Good.
And Theresa May goes over there. And they all meet, you know, the head of the European Commission, the head of the European this, that, and the other military, all the others. And yet they're always laughing and smiling and patting each other on the back.
Mm.
Yeah, that's this impression that they always give, is that what a good party this is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, we're not in it.
Well, that's so true. We're definitely not in it. I think we're supposed to be the ones passing the drinks and working our guts out in order to do so.
Right. And the really horrifying thing, or the startling thing, is that if it wasn't for us providing all of them with the massive fortunes that they have managed to sequester away without our awareness, they wouldn't be able to have plans to control us and destroy the planet.
No, that is the deep irony. And that's the same deep irony as you were saying about we humans living at this particular point in time, still not seeming to realize what it is we're doing, or putting it another way, what it is we're not doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is in spite of the huge amount of information now available on what is approximating the truth as opposed to the lie. I'm talking about the internet, of course, you know.
Right.
I mean, people actually now, if they cared to put a question onto the internet asking such and such and such a thing, they would get two versions of the answer. They'd get the official answer, and they'd get the answer from people like us.
Right, right.
They don't even put the question in.
Right. And they have all of the people who are professionals lined up already to negate anything that someone comes out with as the truth.
Yes, they do that. Of course they do. And they're getting more and more clever and sophisticated, aren't they?
Oh, indeed. No question about it.
Yeah, they must be very well paid, I think.
Yes, yes.
At least the most effective ones must be. Let's put it that way.
Right, right.
So, so we have this overall clash, really, between, we were saying, I think, on almost every show we've done, we pinpointed the fact that the time of rising planetary energy, actually the energy is being sent to this planet. And that is the metaphysical level of the Zany Mystic show. You know, this is the energy, the energy required for human beings to take on the deep state and what is behind the deep state in the universe. The energy required to do that is being freely given to us at this point in time. That I feel quite convinced, because I get shots of it occasionally myself, especially when I'm up against something which is very big. I find an enormous boost of energy comes my way once I focus on having to try and do something. So I very often say to people, look, it's no good coming back to me and saying, you shouldn't be fighting, you know. You shouldn't be doing that, because you're just introducing the same negative type of energy as people who are up there and who are causing problems to you. You're just repeating the cycle. You're throwing it back at them, they're throwing it at you. Therefore, you should pull yourself back from that. You should go into deep meditation, and you should realize that until you are perfect, it's no good asking anyone else to be, etc. I don't need to go through the whole
thing. Right, right.
But this is the what you might call the standard answer of the meditator, the pacifist, the person who feels that the answer is not taking action on the physical level, but taking action on the mental and spiritual level. Now, I don't argue with this. I don't say you're wrong. I say you're right. But I say, so am I right. It's only when you put the two together that you then have something which will actually produce the tipping point change.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. It isn't one or the other. It's both. It's both. And this is what, apparently, someone was telling me the other day, almost nobody can focus on. They can't hold the two things in their mind without believing they're a contradiction.
Ah, yes. Well, that brings us to the idea that we're multidimensional beings, and that we're designed to hold many different levels of thought at the same time.
Ah, nicely put. Go on.
Well, you know, that we are directly connected to whatever the source is, and every level in between that, and we happen to be in the third dimension. So this is where we're getting the big onslaught of energies which are designed to keep us from having those connections. And they know, the insiders know, that these energies are real and that they are coming to us, and they will do anything and everything to stop it from happening and keep humanity from waking up, because if we do, they're dead. They're gone. Push. It's the end of them.
Yes,
and
it
so
is.
So they're fighting for their lives, and
yes,
yet,
it is.
And we're fighting for our lives, with, and yep. We don't even know it.
Well said. And this is really truth. And so the old sort of medieval battleground stories where the knights charge into battle, you know?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Are very appropriate, but this is the 21st century retake of that, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and it's been that way throughout the ages from the very beginning of time.
Exactly. It's been that. So still feel that I am a type of warrior, and the word is quite often used. And I do follow certain leaders in the world of spirituality, one of whom I particularly admire, who is no longer alive. He passed about 20 years ago, who is constantly making reference, the Indian, to the fact that the warrior element in humanity is critically important. You can't set it aside and believe that only an internal, inner looking, raising of spiritual energy is enough. He said, you've got to remove the people from power who are doing the damage as well.
That's about everyone.
Yes, exactly. So this is unfortunately where the divide and conquer factor, which is always the great tool, of course, of the oppressor, has been very successful, because it's broken up what should be an alliance between, let's say, greens, spiritual people, meditators, environmentalists, ecologists, new economy people. They really, by now, ought to have formed one body taking on these people.
Yes.
But unfortunately, they haven't. They're still separate segments.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is one of the biggest challenges, is developing the unity which we know exists at other levels. Here in the field of duality, which is being reinforced, so that we do remain divided and conquered.
Yes, it is being reinforced for that very purpose. And another thing, talking about duality that's being enforced, I wouldn't say reinforced, because this is, as far as I know, quite original,
yes,
if not unique, is something particularly bizarre, I would say, which is this idea that you can be neither a man nor a woman. And if you elect to be neither a man or a woman, it's possible to make you that way. Well, first of all, you can change your sex. You can decide you want to be a woman. And if you're a woman, you can decide you want to be a man. You can go and have an operation to do it. And, you know, that's an incredible form of preoccupation for those people who are only thinking about themselves, you know,
right,
in a me world. This is like,
right,
the ultimate talking point.
Yes.
I can just hear people, can't you? You know, oh, are you going to go for an operation? Wow, I know someone. I know someone went for an operation. She decided to do that. He's going to be gender neutral. It's like casual conversations. People at the same time using their mobile phones and talking to each other about it. You know, so the plan behind all that is, of course, do away with sexuality, and you've got a total open book for the robotic society to happen.
Yeah,
no,
absolutely,
reproduction needed. You know, it'll be all done in labs. As long as you've got money, you'll be able to still have some sperms defrozen, and you'll be able to have some babies. But that'll be it. There'll be no more sexual activity in the human race.
Right.
And I can see this working very hard in England. I'm particularly aware of it. A lot of people are talking about having the right, if they don't feel comfortable, to change their sex. Now, in homosexuality or in lesbianism, people might not feel comfortable, but they don't change their sex. They
right.
just decide it's perfectly okay. You know, I'm going to do that. And it's all been accepted. Society's accepted this. But now it's moved a degree further. It's not good enough to do that anymore. Now you actually want to change yourself.
Right.
But nothing to do with anything to do with improving or changing life outside. Only self-interest behind all this. So the power of the system to put the propaganda out in the form of a fashion, because that's what it is.
Right, right.
You know, fashionable to change your sex in 2019. That's the sort of thing that's getting people down.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, that can be done by genetics, but before the child is even born, choosing the sex. And in China, I read, they're able to fertilize eggs with artificial sperm and artificial eggs. So They're creating life out of something that, you know, probably doesn't have all the bells and whistles that people can't see with the human eye.
Well, that's certainly true. Yes, that's certainly true. In fact, I read just the other day that in China they have succeeded in creating the first baby based on, what was it, taking some cell out of something. I don't know exactly what it was, but the laboratory baby has been, so to speak, born. And, of course, you know, about 20 years ago when this sort of stuff was being threatened, it sounded like every humanitarian institution in the world was saying, we must guard against that happening. Mm-hmm. And everyone's saying, hear, hear. You know, you can hear them saying it in Parliament. Hear, hear. And then when it does happen, people silence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't you think that it might work in such a way that we're introduced to an idea or a meme, and that they're carefully nurtured and then dropped and nurtured and dropped until we become so accustomed to the thought of it that we just ignore it? We believe, oh, that's okay. That's just the way it is.
Well, I think that is very well put, Lance. I think you got it right there. Was it Goebbels or was it Hitler who said during the Second World War, if you tell people enough times that they're stupid, they will believe they are.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. You know, it's just a question of repetition.
Right, right. And they all do it.
And they all do it.
Yeah, because it works. Well,
go ahead.
No, that's how it works. And they know that it works. And so they, all of them are geared to say the same talking point. And they're all on the same page. So, you know, if everybody that's at the top of the ladder, according to, you know, some people's beliefs, is saying the same thing, and it's literally the same thing, the same words in a sentence, then we get basically mind-controlled.
And then what you get is a fear of stepping out of line.
Yes.
And that's a very, very deep fear in people.
Well, yes, we look at what they do to people that do step out of line, the witch burnings by the church, and, I mean, all the horrors that have happened to beautiful cultures, the Aztecs and so on, and have all their gold stolen. And I mean, it's a repetitious cycle that has been going on since the beginning of time.
And I wasn't referring to such an extreme stepping out of line. I was stepping out of even a very minor stepping out of line in the social context of groups of people who are going along with each other according to a certain fashionable way of behaving.
Yeah.
You know? Because people internally are so lonely and so divorced from their connection with nature that they're frightened if they might lose faith, or someone in the group might lose faith in them if they did something out of the ordinary.
Yes. And you can become an outcast on social media. And all it takes is a few dozen people to harangue you for what you said, you know, that it was prejudiced or it was to this or to that. And you're basically drummed out of the group. Group
thing. Well, they are. I think this is exactly it. So people are behaving in a very herd-like spirit, and they've been herded into various different groups. They've been divided against each other, and they keep their heads down. I mean, that's actually a sort of generational issue in a way. I can't help feeling that the generation of my children, who are in their early 30s, is almost a lost generation. I don't want to say that in a negative spirit, because there's individual examples, as there are everywhere, and people that have broken out of that. But there's a huge number of people. I remember my son said when he was at school, when about 10, 15 years ago, he said, most of the boys in my school don't believe the world's going to last much longer, and therefore they aren't going to bother with doing anything.
Right. Right. What's the point?
Yeah. Instead of saying the world's not going to last much longer, therefore we better do something about it, it's the reverse psychology. So it's like the archons, who are creatures from another planet, supposedly, and had been around ever since the idea of a devil existed. They come along and they play around in the background. We don't see them necessarily, but they reverse the truth and make it into an untruth. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, they took the swastika, which was originally an old Indian peace symbol,
right,
and made it into the Nazi
right.
one, or and gave Hitler the idea to do so. And but they do this with everything. And when there's an atmosphere in the air of fear, they feed on that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the fear is perpetuated, they get more strong, and they're able to control even further, so to speak. So that's how the sort of synchronicity of the whole thing works, I think. Until you can break out of the fear, until you can break out of the fear and find courage in yourself to break the spell, the downward trend continues. And the only question, I suppose, is what would it take? Let's say we one hypothetical person who's decided already in school that the world's not going to last much longer, therefore there's not my point in doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
At what point might that person decide that they would have to do something because it's intolerable? I just wonder a lot about that.
Ah, yes. Well, it seems to me, when I look at the crowds in New York, that it's already intolerable.
To our sense, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I can't stay in London or any big city for more than a day now.
Oh, it's just horrifying. I can't, you know, it's just almost impossible for me to do that.
Have you been recently to New York?
No, I haven't.
No.
And just the pictures of the people, massive,
oh, the pictures,
walking,
yeah,
you know, 12 in a row, just a mass of people, like a artery that's going to the heart,
yes,
is just frightening to me. Each one with their own
too.
Little, you know, scary little lives.
Exactly. And I noticed the trend, however, by and large, is still for people to move into big cities. You know, it's still considered the thing to do.
Well, yes, if you're insane.
If you're insane. Well, they are insane. Yes, they are insane. And the point is, of course, now, particularly with the rollout of this 5G and Agenda 21
yep.
coming into being,
yep.
You're going to move into cities which are completely wired for your control. So, you know, you're just moving into that, walking into a prison, really.
Absolutely. And it's a prison that they have made to appear has an open door.
Oh, yes. Well, it's full of things that Huxley and Orwell are writing about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You can take your suma and feel quite relaxed in spite of it all.
Yes, absolutely.
There's something for everybody, however much of a problem they've got living in this prison. There's always something which will help them feel that they're actually free, and it's all rather nice.
Yes, and, you know, from my point of view, it's a maze. It's an earthly maze, and there are so many infinite ways that we can get take a side trip that eventually ends up with a brick wall. And
yes.
most people don't realize that they've hit the end, and they just keep doing the same thing, or they try to do something different or something better, and they still are at the dead end. And the smart people would realize that their path is a dead end and turn around and go back and retrace their steps and try to do something that's more constructive that leads somewhere. But it really is all these traps that can ensnare us. And it's a big net, and it's got just about all the fish already, but they want every one of the fish. So it's making the net more tight and resilient.
So I think if they thought about using chips, you could say they want fish and chips.
Yeah, and they'll get real chips implanted under the skin.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, I do want to mention something on the positive side. One of my guests is Mary Rodwell, and she has done a lot of research and has written a couple of books on the new humans. And she's interviewed a lot of kids. And her book is called The New Human, Awakening to Our Cosmic Heritage. And she interviews these kids who have come in with full knowledge of their past. And most of them are absolutely brilliant, and they're at the genius level. And they're here to do what they're here to do. And they remember being a, you know, some kind of scientist on another, in another galaxy where they had transportation that, you know, was invisible and things like that. And they talk about all these things. And one of them, Mary asked what he did in his previous life, and he gave her the title, but he said, "Oh, Mary, you wouldn't understand." And so these kids are choosing to incarnate to make a difference. And I believe that they wouldn't be doing that in the large quantities that are coming here now if there was no hope.
Well, that's exactly what I feel, Lance. Exactly what I feel. I've got two charming grandchildren here in Poland, both redheads, incidentally.
Wow.
One aged 8 and one aged 10. And they're constantly fighting with their parents. And, you know, it's tough on the parents, I will admit. But they simply say, especially the youngest one, he says, "Look, no good telling me that. I'm going to do this." And, you know, "Goodbye." And he walks out the door and goes and plays. And they're sort of stunned, you know.
Yeah.
And if they get really angry, of course, he bursts into tears and he complains bitterly and he comes and does whatever it is he tells them he's got to do. But basically, he's already got enough courage and conviction about what it is he wants to do just to simply do it and tell his parents, "I'm sorry, I'm doing it," you know. And that's something which a lot of people don't gain in an entire lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with you. And I usually always paint a lot of black stuff to start with, because it's the reality we live in and we've got to look it in the face and see it and without trying to dodge it.
Right.
But then I say, look, the light is called forth even more strongly the darker it gets. And I do believe these children, these sort of angel dust type children, who are undoubtedly on a level of relatively genius by comparison to many of us, are coming in their thousands. And they are so amazing, their parents, and amazing many other people besides, with their fortitude and their knowledge and their uncanny, almost, sense of what's true and what's not true, without having to use words, you know.
Yes.
So that is a very powerful indicator of the fact that, indeed, they wouldn't be coming unless they felt that there was indeed a very strong chance of turning it around.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There lies an amazing and wonderful conviction, which we should all grab, I think.
Yeah.
We're tempted to look at children and think, oh, aren't they lovely? Aren't they cute? Aren't they pretty? Aren't they this? Aren't they adorable? And aren't they naughty? And don't they annoy us and all the rest? But this is on a whole nother level. This is a signal from the universe about a certain power, which if we nurture it and send it and channel it in the right direction, has the ability, supported by us, of course, to make the sort of changes which maybe we couldn't make without them being around.
Right, and they seem to see that we've made a muck of things, and they're just not having any of it, because they can see you know, further than we can.
We have made a shocking mess of things. At least I look back in my own life and I think I was quite aware at a very young age of the fact that something was wrong. Something was deeply wrong. I remember, oddly enough, the first time I had this really strong sense was when I was maybe 6-7 years old. And my mother took me to the local village church. And the vicar told everyone to read a certain psalm. And the prayer before the psalm, or during the psalm, or the words of the psalm were, I fall on my knees because I am pray to the Lord to forgive me, for I am a poor and miserable sinner.
Huh.
And I looked up from my little place close to the floor, because I was a young boy and there's adults were all around me, and I looked at my mother's face and I saw this strangely blank, rather sad and accepting expression on her face. And I said to myself, I'm never going to say those words. It's not true. It's not true.
Right.
It's a lie. And I got it already then, you know.
Wow.
But having to go through the British public school system, private school system, where they knock everything out of you that might not conform with the status quo. And the status quo at that time for me was still to go out there and run the empire. Mm-hmm. You know, the school I went to was based on bringing up boys, because it's all boys school, to be leaders on behalf of the British Empire. You know?
Oh, yeah.
The colonial approach.
Yeah.
So the fact that I got the flash before I even got into this private school system meant that I suddenly realized that I was going to be educated in a way which was entirely different in all respects from the direction I wished to go in. So I remember saying to myself, with tears in my eyes, having been taken away from my parents and put in the school, not seeing my parents for 12 weeks in a row, having never been removed from them before at all, I remember saying to myself, I'm going to have to put my subtle consciousness in my pocket for the next 10 years.
Oh, wow. But
once I get it out, I'm going to make a big fuss.
Wow, that is really interesting.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Well, clearly you are one of those people who is meant to be here to basically act as a mirror for all of us, and there are not that many out there that are doing what you're doing, but you hold up the mirror and you're unrelenting about it, about sharing your own truth, and it just seems to me that your truth happens to be mine also.
I agree, Lance. I think we have a very strong vibratory connection in this issue, and that we've suffered a great deal as a consequence. We've suffered extremely, actually. I think both of us. I know from your book,
you went through. Oh yeah.
I never wrote those sort of details in any of my books about the things that I've been through. Maybe I will one day, but they're not so different. And they are the fact that we came out with a positive outlook on the future just shows you what a deep spirit of love, truth, wisdom, and joy there is in mankind. You know, they couldn't knock it out of us.
Yep.
We had power, and we decided to hold on to it. And we decided once we had anything approaching a bit of freedom, not only to use it, but to expand it and to use it in a way we felt we could be most effective in helping and supporting others. And we are, of course, blessed in many respects. And it's great to be able to talk to you about that.
Right. Well, you know, Julian, we're ending on a happy note, an uplifting note, I think. And we're just about out of time. We may have a minute left. And I just wanted to give you a chance to, mention where your websites are. And, you know, if your new book is coming out soon, I certainly am hoping that you'll send me a copy when it's ready.
Oh, I certainly will. Yes, well, my website's www.julianrose.info. And by going onto that website, anyone who's interested in my two books, Changing Course for Life and In Defense of Life, they will be able to purchase a copy from the internet. And I don't suggest people use Amazon because it's a vast corporation which is killing off all the small booksellers in that world and a lot more besides that. So buy directly from the author if you possibly can.
Yes.
That's one of the right things to do, just like you should be buying your food directly from the farmer and not from the supermarket.
Yes.
So on and so on. These are the changes, the very fundamental, very basic, very practical changes that if everybody starts making them, will make the difference. And until we do, the difference won't happen. But it's been a pleasure, Lars, to speak with you again. And I hope I'm invited yet again for another fireside chat. I always laugh because it sounds as though it's meant to be so relaxed. And we always get so excited.
I know. I really love talking to you, Julian. And it's been a pleasure having you back on my first show since the fire. And I just want to thank you for all that you do. And of course, you'll be back. you couldn't stop me with a gaggle of horses. So you're always welcome on my show.
Lovely. And all the best to all those listeners out there. Never give up. Screw your courage up. Get out there. Make the changes. And we'll all meet each other on some plane there's fourth or fifth dimension in future years.
Yes.
And we'll all have a great party then.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Julian. And that's the wrap. Good night, everybody. Good night, Julian.
Good night.